This episode of the Disney Film Project is sponsored by TouringPlans.com. Head over to TouringPlans.com and use their tools to save yourself time and money when you are at Walt Disney World or Disneyland. You can use the Lines application on your mobile phone, use the crowd calendar to figure out which parks to hit which days, or use the Touring Plans to save time and money waiting in line. TouringPlans.com is the sponsor of this episode of the Disney Film Project. Welcome again, everybody, to the Disney Film Project podcast. This is the program where we talk about the films of the Walt Disney Company. Marvel, Lucasfilm, Pixar, Animation, Disney Toon Studios, and Walt Disney Pictures themselves. You will find it all here on this program throughout the many moons that we have been doing this show. We try to talk about just about everything, so make sure you listen, and thank you for downloading this episode. I'm Ryan Kilpatrick, and along with these folks, we run DisneyFilmProject.com, where you can find the show notes for these episodes. You can also find reviews of Blu-rays and recent DVD releases. You can find all kinds of great stuff about old cartoons from the very beginnings of the Walt Disney Studios. So make sure you go and check out the great content over at DisneyFilmProject.com. Of course, joining me as always, we have Mr. Todd Perlmutter, who I believe is the original moon pilot.
Yes, I was shot to the sky and I returned, unlike this guy.
Yeah, who we don't know. I don't think he's going to come back.
They could actually like work it into maybe like if they ever buy Star Trek, he could be piloting V'ger back.
He could totally be in the next Star Wars film. We don't know. We don't know a lot about it yet. So
yeah, no. By the way, I also wanted to say that I caught your little insert of many moons in the beginning there.
Thank you. When talking about a film like this, you have to find your humor where you can. Of course, we are also joined by our other co-host, Miss Rachel Cole, who you can find over at justpressplay.net. And Rachel, you are not from Beta Lyrae. I am assured.
Nope, my home planet has one moon, not seven.
Fair enough. And, of course, there is our fine producer, Ms. Cheryl Perlmutter, who you can find on Twitter at CherylP3 or at about.me/CherylP3. If I were to compare Cheryl to somebody in this movie, she would be the general because she definitely keeps us on schedule and moving on time, although I don't think she would like that comparison. Am I correct?
I don't mind the general. The other guy that I liked is the detective guy because he was, like, went in there, took control. And when he got you know the duty to watch this guy, he was on him like glue.
McCluskey?
Yes.
Yeah.
Except for when he ran into the convention, but that couldn't have been helped.
Yeah. Except for that, he was on top of it. So if you are a really deep cut Disney nerd, you will know that. If you didn't know by the title of the episode, that we are talking about Moon Pilot, the 1962. I hesitate to use the term science fiction film by Walt Disney Pictures starring Tom Tryon, best known for his role on TV as Texas John Slaughter.
Yes.
And a young French actress named Dani Saval, who plays the Lyrae, who we will discuss her secret in a minute. And, of course, Charlie the Chimp, because no movie on Disney Film Project is complete without some sort of animal.
Lately.
We also have a couple of other people that are noteworthy. Brian Keith from Family Affair.
And the Parent Trap.
And the Parent Trap, mm-hmm. Yep.
Tommy Kirk, also possibly related to Will Wheaton.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, can we talk about that for a second? Because I tweeted that while watching the movie.
Yes.
Literally, I have never seen anyone look more like Will Wheaton than Tommy Kirk, or vice versa.
Well, you are well versed in time travel.
Yes.
And I'm going to leave it at that.
I'm going to take a picture of them together.
I'm not sure that you can actually do that. That's all I'm saying.
It might be the end of the universe?
Yes.
Oh, excellent thing to try.
And we also have Bob Sweeney from Toby Tyler.
Yes. Many, many Disney repertory players in this film. So in other words, not a lot of standout actors that you would know from lots of other things. But if you enjoyed a lot of the Disney films from the late 50s, early 60s, you will recognize many people who appear in Moon Pilot, because they did not go out to find a whole bunch of people other than the aforementioned Tom Tryon in the title role of the Moon Pilot, Captain Richmond Talbot.
So, Charlie the Chimp there.
Yes.
Real name was Cheetah, actually one of the many chimpanzees that played Cheetah for Tarzan for various reasons. In other words, it's unclear if this particular Cheetah starred in a movie or not. Nobody knows.
No, nobody. I'm imagining the Cheetah record keeping is not, you know, up to snuff.
There's a Wikipedia page of all the chimpanzees that have ever been played the role Cheetah.
Okay, whoever wrote that needs to find another hobby.
Believe me, when I found it, I was like completely amazed that it even existed.
That's one of those things that you find while you're looking at these old movies, and it's a time suck, is it not? Like, you just spend 15 minutes doing that, and you go, what did I just do with my life?
No, the person, it's hysterical. The person actually lists out the owner, the trainer, what movies they might have done, what possible other functions they might have done. Like, this one might have just been a show one that went around the country or starred a movie. They just don't know 100%.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. So Moon Pilot is based on the 1960 novel by Robert Buckner, Starfire, which appeared as a serial in the Saturday Evening Post. And it was supposed to be – the novel was a satirical look at the space program. So it makes, you know, little jabs at the space program, the government, and how everything was working together there in the Kennedy era. And how we were going to get to the moon or send somebody to the moon. Because you have to remember, at the time that the novel was written, at the time this film comes out, man had not yet sent someone to the moon.
Yes. This is also the, according to Jim Corcus anyway, reason in his FBI file, it actually says on a picture about the movie that Walt might indeed be compromised, indicating that he was J. Edgar's one of his communists at the time, potentially.
Yeah, well, there was a whole thing of Walt and the House Un-American Activities Committee when people were investigating who may or may not be a communist, and Walt appeared before the committee and was rather adamant that there were communists in Hollywood. And it's a whole thing in the history of the studio.
Just a claim, because I know we're on Skype and the NSA may be listening. We are no way disclaiming that we have anything to do with any of this stuff. We're just podcast people.
This is very true. This is a very good point. That is a good disclaimer, Cheryl.
Yes.
And somewhere in some basement, somebody might actually sift through these recordings and say, oh, good, they told us the truth, but I doubt it.
Yes. I'll also add that while I'm not a communist, I'm also not a Republican or a Democrat.
There you go. Back to Moon Pilot, however. It is, to say satirical, I have not read the novel, which I assume most of us have not, or most anyone has not, but the film does take some very subtle jabs at the government, especially at the FBI, which gets renamed into a – well, I say subtle because it's not actually called the FBI in the film. The FBI actually requested that they change it because, well, they're the FBI and they can do that.
And good for them. Good job, FBI.
Yeah, it wasn't clear what part of the government they were from. All we knew is that they all wore fedoras. Like, they all just got their badges in fedoras.
Yes, and that they still refer to themselves as G-Men.
Yes. Well, now, perhaps it's the Federal Fedora Agency.
There are actually reviews from the time period that actually just refer to them as FBI agents. Some newspaper made up their own ad for the movie and actually put the FBI in it. You know, so that, like, everybody knew. They were called it in the movie, but everybody knew.
Yes.
It wasn't a secret.
Yeah, it was. Well, I assume because most people probably immediately would have picked up on the book. If it was in the Saturday Evening Post, I mean, pretty much everybody in America was reading that magazine at the time.
Right, and in the book it is the FBI.
Yes, it is.
Right.
But yeah, there were some it's, well, it's not like they're openly like just completely farcical, but they're bumbling, the FBI are. And then the senator, they poke fun at him. They poke fun, the general they don't really poke fun at so much as they make him so over the top that, you know, he's somewhat ridiculous. I mean, the whole thing is definitely a satire, but it's not Dr. Strangelove, let's put it that way.
Yes, I would agree with that. It's a different sort of movie. I mean, it's its own form of satire, would be a good way to put that.
Yes, it's not. I guess the best way to put it is it's not satire for satire's sake. They are trying to tell an actual story with a beginning, middle, and end. How successful they are is up for debate, but that is what they were trying to do when making the film. So, we can launch into discussion of the film, and I say that because it's not very long as far as plot goes. It's mainly just sort of a, I don't know, almost like a Keystone Cops sort of thing most of the time, because there's just not a lot that happens from a plot standpoint in this.
Yeah, I have a note about the soundtrack that the soundtrack suggests that exciting things are happening when usually they're not.
That's a very good way to
like, especially at the hotel, the music is just like super bum 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 bum, and it's like nothing is happening.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, like, the opening, I would say, like, 5 minutes is of General Vanneman, the Brian Keith character, just kind of supervising this rocket launch.
Which drove me back into the unidentified flying ball.
Yeah, especially the senator, because, once again, we have a stupid senator who doesn't understand science and is worried about the election year.
Also, keep in mind, the ship in Unidentified Flying Oddball is the Stardust, and this one is the Starfire. So there is that similarity in names as well. That one probably invokes the other.
Mm-hmm.
My notes say it's already liftoff. Did we miss something? Is the movie almost over?
Right. Well, because they play that trick on you. Like, it's a long sequence. I mean, we open the movie with liftoff, and we see the general in the control room worried about the astronaut, and then, like Rachel said, the senator comes in. They move over to another control room, which I don't understand. They go from, like, one door of a bank of monitors and stuff over to the next room over, which is apparently more important control room. Did anybody understand that?
I really have no – so apparently, according to Jim Corcus, Walt had actually – gone to Vandenberg Air Force Base to see a launch of an Apollo rocket, like a test launch. So I guess this was something he picked up on, is that they had multiple control rooms perhaps. I honestly don't know.
I feel like Walt went to go see that because Walt wanted to go see that, and it had no bearing on the movie. That I'm just going to throw that out there.
Right. It should be noted that while Walt is sitting here making fun of the space program for a lot of this movie, okay, Walt actually – avidly love the space program, because literally he had drawing a blank.
Oh, on the TV show, Man yes. in Space.
Man yeah. in Space, right. Yeah, that's a fantastic thing. Not to mention, he dedicated a whole episode of World of Color to this called Spy in the Sky, where half of the episode is a preview and discussion about this movie, and the other half is a whole thing about the space program.
Yeah, I mean, Walt's the show, the Tomorrowland shows on the Disneyland TV show that Ward Kimball did, that were they released them on DVD a little while back. Those shows were so influential. Eisenhower asked him to have them screened at the White House so that he could help convince everyone that there needed to be a space program. So, I mean, it definitely tracks that Walt was a huge supporter of the space program and helped get it off the ground. So, yeah, it is sort of – this is a very different attitude than you would find in those TV shows, which is very strange to me.
Well, this movie has nothing to do with the reality of how space travel works at all. The scene where they're at the dinner party and they basically just say, "Who wants to go into space?" I just read, "No, no, that's not how it works."
Even back then, it wasn't how it worked, because we know that you know, the early astronauts went through almost more rigorous training than they go through today, because they really didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. Now they kind of sort of have a better idea of what to expect.
Yeah.
I wrote a note that I wanted to ask about. So did those controls that Charlie is flipping switches on look familiar to anybody else?
Like Mission Space?
They look exactly like the control panel in Mission Space. I wonder if that's intentional. Like, I've never heard anyone say that before, but the switches and the shape of the controls and everything, I mean, dead ringer to me.
I wonder if that's just the way space travel... I mean, it, you know, it's not like you would focus a lot of your attention on digital controls and things for your space rocket. Like, I'm assuming you would spend most of your money on other things. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's just the way it is these days.
It may be easier to repair mechanical stuff, too, if you think about it.
Yeah, it's true.
Should something happen. Apollo 11. Right.
Yes. Yes. True. But yeah, so the giant opening, I mean, we get the launch, we get the control rooms, we get everyone worried about whether the astronaut's going to be okay. We get to see the mission that they fly to catch the astronaut in the capsule, which is our first introduction to Captain Talbot, the character who will become our hero. They capture the capsule, open the capsule door, and it turns out that the astronaut in question was, in fact, Charlie the Chimp.
Yes.
Which is a less than exciting reveal.
I figured it out about 5 minutes before it happened.
Because you saw the monkey on the poster.
Well, I was like, how else are they going to work the monkey into the movie? And then I figured it out.
Fair enough, fair enough. All of this leads to the dinner scene that Rachel was just talking about. So, as mentioned, General Vandeman says that, you know, now that we've had a successful moon orbit with the chimpanzee, we are going to send a man into space, and we're going to do it at the end of the week. Which, again, not how space travel works, precisely. And he's walking around the table asking for volunteers while Charlie the chimpanzee is acting up, and he's sitting next to Captain Talbot. And just as he is about to give up on asking for volunteers, Charlie throws something on the ground. Captain Talbot reaches over to grab it. Charlie stabs him in the rear end with a fork. Captain Talbot jumps up, and all of a sudden it is assumed that he has volunteered, and he is now going to the moon.
Yay, movie over, right?
Well, no. He isn't just sitting next to the chimpanzee. He's, like, put on chimpanzee duty. Like, he has to, like, feed, like, Charlie and stuff. Like, I didn't know exactly if that was part of his job description, that he was just kind of the handler, or...
Or if he's, like, an animal trainer, or what. Yeah, I'm with you.
I didn't understand either.
I agree. I did not understand his job description either.
I'm just rolling with it.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
That's probably a good thing to do. But yes, Captain Talbot is now, all of a sudden, he is the man who will be headed to the moon, and he is soon met with the general, and he is given the rules of engagement, because, you know, they tell him they're going to lock him down on the base. He protests and says that he needs to go to visit his mother,
which I like
is
how he
the useless
them.
Plot point ever, which we'll cover in a second.
He holds them ransom over it, too. He's like, I'm not going.
Which, by the way, like, why wouldn't they go to one of the other seven guys in the room?
Oh, because they say that they already did a press conference that he was going to the moon.
What? Wait.
What?
I'm sorry, no.
Yeah, they did. They said that in the movie.
But then the rest of the movie, because I missed that, the rest of the movie they say that they can't tell everybody.
I agree. They said they've already announced it to the press. They legitimately say that at this point in the movie, and I didn't understand the rest of the movie as a result either. I just want to say that up front.
Guys, I'm losing my mind here. Oh my gosh.
I don't think that actually happened.
By the way,
the world doesn't make sense, Todd.
I think this movie could not make sense. Also, we learned that Talbot, while an Air Force captain, doesn't like to fly.
Yes, which seems much like Dusty from Planes not wanting to fly.
It's...
Him being an actual plane and all.
I don't know. It's just one of those things.
Maybe it was inspired by Captain Talbot. I don't know. But yes, he holds them ransom so he can get his leave to go visit his mother, which, again, useless plot point. It seems that this scene apparently has no relation to the rest of the movie based on what the bombshell that Todd has just dropped. But they give him the rules of the road for, okay, we're going to give you the 3-day leave to go visit your mother, because the senator says if the press ever found out that we didn't give him the leave, you know, to go visit his mother, what would they say? But here's the rules. He can have, you know, no alcohol, tobacco, any of those sorts of things. He cannot eat. He has to eat the paste that they have given him for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And he has to be relaxed. No excitement. In other words, no women. No dating, no women, no nothing. So those are the rules that he has.
Don't talk to strangers.
Don't talk to strangers because there could be spies.
Yes, kids, don't talk to strangers.
So those are the rules he's supposed to live by for the rest of the film, or until he goes and gets shot into space. None of which he actually abides by, I think.
And the most important thing the general tells him? Anybody?
Enjoy yourself.
The enemy never sleeps.
Which doesn't seem possible.
At the end of his list of things he can't do, he just says, well, enjoy yourself. And he says, well, how? He can't. No dames, no food, no talking to strangers. I mean, what's he supposed to do on his leave?
It's a good point.
He's supposed to be spending time with mom.
Which he does not do.
Yes. Mom had her bridge curl mean, so apparently he didn't call her and say, hey, I'm coming home for, you know.
Yeah, he asked his mom to go out to the movies with him, and he got turned down. I don't know why, but it just cracked me up. I'm just like, he got turned down by his own mother.
Now, that would happen. I don't know if you, Todd's mom, she has mahjong every week. If we came over, even if it was Todd and I and Jasper, and Jasper's her favorite dog, still she'd be at mahjong that night.
Yeah, so the devoted Captain Talbot heads onto a plane and to visit his mother. And can I just say, as I was literally watching this on a plane, I would have rather been on that plane.
Planes had bigger seats back then and lounges.
I would have rather been on that plane.
Not arguing. I agree.
Okay.
It was a nice plane.
Very nice.
Yeah.
This is where he meets a girl who speaks with a French accent named Liray, who is sitting across from him, and he's not feeling well. His stomach's a little upset, and she offers him a pill to calm him down. And it's not until after that he's thinking about whether or not she's a spy because of the warning that the enemy never sleeps.
He takes a pill, though.
Captain Talbot is not what you'd call bright.
I would agree with that.
He's not dumb, but he's not super bright.
No.
Sort of in between.
I also, was her accent really French? Because it was just kind of a vaguely European accent.
Well, the actress is legitimately French, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm going to guess. She's
in a comedy movie. She's actually, this is not her most famous movie, obviously. Her most famous movie is there's a movie with Tony Curtis and Jerry Lewis, and she's one of the stewardesses that they're training. I can't remember the name of the movie. But they're training stewardesses, and she's one of them in the movie. And that's her famous movie.
Gotcha. Okay. So, yeah, it's an interesting little thing here, because we don't know what to make of this. If you've seen the poster or something, you can probably figure out what's going on. But it's just a weird situation where he thinks that she's a spy, And so he, you know, gets a little freaked out, talks to the stewardess, finds out that her name is Lyrae, L-Y-R-A-E, and she keeps following him after he gets off the plane and tells him she has something to tell him. She told him that on the plane, he doesn't want to listen. She follows him afterwards as he's getting into his brother's car, his brother played by the Will Wheaton lookalike Tommy Kirk.
Yes.
Who drives him home to Mom, who immediately refuses to spend any time with him because she has bridge.
I'm laughing because I just saw in my notes the title of the book that Lyrae is learning English from is English an Easy Lesson. Notice there's something wrong with that.
Yes. Yeah, it's not exactly up to snuff, is it?
No.
Yeah, so that leads our good friend Captain Talbot to basically wander the neighborhood to try to just, you know, blow off some steam and relax a little bit because he's got to relax. And Lyrae finds him again to tell him that she has something to tell him. He again brushes her off as she causes an accident because she's attractive.
Oh, you know who the driver is?
I do not.
The driver is Bob Hastings. You know who Bob Hastings is?
I do not.
Yes, so since the 90s and a couple times before that, he always plays the animated voices of Jim Gordon.
Oh, very nice.
Okay, so that's who the guy in the car is. Jim Gordon being Commissioner James Gordon from Batman Anything.
Huh.
Come on, everybody knows Batman.
Well, maybe.
Okay,
I gotta put it
fair
out
enough.
There fully.
Yeah. So, being concerned, Captain Talbot calls the general, General Vanneman, and says, look, I think there's a spy. I think you're coming after me. General Vanneman then calls Federal Security to come and pick up Captain Talbot, who takes a bus to San Francisco. Now, from where, we don't know, because we don't know where his mom was. But he does take a bus to San Francisco.
I'm confused by a few things at this point in the movie, okay?
Aren't we all?
First of all, he won't let him take a bus to go see his mom, but he takes an airplane to a bus to see his mom anyway, right? Or something? Oh, no, the bus is now. That's right. But so he puts him on a bus anyway? There's something really confusing about that. But before even that, the Air Force base that the Air Force is at, I thought was McCord Air Force Base, if I heard it right in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So why do they end up in San Francisco, which is where Vandenberg Air Force Base is? I'm so confused by all of this.
I don't know. Well, and they send him to San Francisco, but obviously San Francisco is far, far away because the general has to fly in a plane to get to San Francisco to pick him up.
Yes.
Again, not sure what that's all about.
I'm not sure either.
And maybe I'm not supposed to be sure.
One of my favorite things about the whole movie is when the general and McCloskey are arguing with each other. I don't know why. I just think the lines that they're throwing back and forth are brilliant.
Well, the two of them, the two character actors, I have to say, they are pretty funny. They're kind of the live spot in the whole movie.
Eric had a nickname for his character. He called them Creepy Bogarts because he kind of vaguely looks like Humphrey Bogart, especially with the fedora and the suit and everything. But when he first meets him, he's kind of supremely creepy.
On the bus.
Yes.
The moment when they stare across from each other at the bus is really weird. I agree. Completely mm-hmm. weird.
I also want to point out that Richmond is dressed just like Pee Wee Herman. Like, he has the gray suit and the red bow tie, and it kept throwing me off every time I saw that bow tie. I was just like...
Brings a whole new dimension to the movie when you think about it now.
Mm-hmm.
It does.
I like when he finally gets escorted to the bridal suite in
yes.
the hotel.
That's where they're going to watch him. That's where McCloskey, the head of the Federal Security, is going to watch him, make sure nobody gets to him. Is in the bridal suite of the, what is it, the Park Lane Hotel?
It didn't even matter to me what hotel it was at this point in the movie. I was more interested in the fact that he calls the general collect.
Yes. And the general accepts the charges, so, you know. Oh, Hold on.
He's calling him. Right now.
So, yes, McCluskey picks up our friend, Mr. Captain Talbot, rather, not Mr. He is a captain, and he has earned that rank, at least best I can tell.
For monkeys.
And they, yes, they give you captainship for that, I guess. And they end up in the Parkline Hotel in San Francisco, where this is where it becomes confusing if they did have a press conference, because McCluskey tries to get out of him why he's so important and what's going on with him that he needs protection all the time. Which, again, if there was a press conference, one would think he would know that already.
It's so confusing to me.
But literally, that's like the next 15 minutes of the movie is them in the hotel room, him, you know, Captain Talbot saying this is the spy and this is what she looks like and all this kind of stuff, and McCluskey trying to figure out why he's so important.
And that big dinner, the big dinner.
Yeah, which I have a note that apparently back in the 1960s there was a TV channel entirely dedicated to car chases.
That is a very long car chase.
It is, yes.
Exceedingly long.
But when Captain Talbot goes in the bathroom to start a shower, Lee Ray shows up in the bathroom, which I thought was inappropriate. I didn't think she needed to be in there.
Well, at least he was properly dressed.
She is foreign.
True enough. It's true. That's a good point, Todd. It's a good point. And she convinces him that there's something wrong with the formula in the rocket, that he's going to end up like Charlie, who came back. Charlie was more aggressive and more unhappy and unstable when he came back than before he left. And so since he was the expert in chimp training, Captain Talbot, you know, does understand this, and she convinces him to meet her in the park outside of the hotel so that they can discuss further. So Captain Talbot convinces them to take him downstairs through the convention hall for some reason, which makes no sense, right?
No, he doesn't convince upstairs. Them. They think he's been compromised because the McCluskey guy thinks that he heard the girl in the room and thinks that she came to visit him and that he's been compromised, so they need to change his location.
Right.
And that's why they're escorting him.
Which still makes no sense.
No. But we learned that Rich is a master of disguise.
Yes, because he comes downstairs and switches places with an old man.
who everybody immediately mistakes him for, apparently, at the convention, right? Because he suddenly, like, everybody at the convention recognizes him. It was very bizarre to me, the whole thing.
Yeah, it didn't make much sense. He sneaks out, he meets Lee Ray in the park, and she reveals to him that her name is not necessarily Lee Ray, although it could be. We're not really told one way or another. She is from the planet Beta Lee Ray, and she has been sent to warn him that he will die in outer space unless something is changed in the formula of the rocket. Okay. She does. She convinces him of this in a very creepy way.
Before we get into the creepy way, Beta Lyrae is not a planet, it's a star system, just so we're clear. I don't, it's a real thing, by the way. A legitimate star system. It's a binary star system. That's what's kind of cool about it. It's also one of the binary star systems that's closest to our galaxy, so that makes it even more, mm-hmm. like they probably just heard about it on a news report about, you know, things that telescopes find and added into the movie. Now, here's the fun part. I kind of sort of feel like there's a lot of movies we can reference, I think, and other things that we can reference at this point in time. Okay, because first of all, she's protected from proton rays. The problem is proton rays, right? Now, proton rays have a different name, right? We generally hear them referred to as, does anyone know? Anyone?
Gamma rays?
Cosmic rays.
Oh.
Okay. And what's interesting...
And not from the Starlight Cafe.
No, not Cosmic Ray, the dude who plays the piano. Cosmic Rays is in the same thing that changes the Fantastic Four into gives them their superpowers.
This was a big thing in the 60s, because remember the Fantastic Four came out in 61, this movie in 62. It was like a big thing. You can't go into outer space because of the Cosmic Rays.
Right. Now, the reason is because what's interesting about Cosmic Rays today... or proton rays, is there's actually a form of therapy that we use today to treat cancer called proton ray therapy. I'm not sure if you knew that. I didn't until I researched this.
No.
But we knew back then, during the time period that this movie was made, during the Fantastic Four, and this is why all these things came out like this, was that we knew that cosmic rays did indeed affect DNA. Hence why Stan Lee made the Fantastic Four, hence why they're talking about it here, because we knew then that you needed to protect astronauts through some means. Now, I don't know, I don't even know what the real way we protect astronauts from cosmic rays is. I presume it's something in the suits that they wear more than necessarily the ship itself, right? Potentially.
We don't have them eat the concert service. You mean they all don't eat the concert service?
Yes.
At Walt Disney World, and then didn't they go off on their journeys?
But did they go to Bay 1, Bay 2, or Bay 3?
It's very strange.
Sorry. So, but I also wanted to say that Proton Rays also have another movie connection. Anyone? Anyone?
No.
How do you catch ghosts? Proton packs fire.
Oh,
proton
with proton packs. Yeah.
There you go. Ghostbusters, folks, in case you didn't get it.
Very good.
So I just wanted to say that. Just wanted to throw that in there because that's really – I cared more about that than the actual movie at this point.
You're not alone in that.
So back to the creepy way that she convinces him, by the way.
Yes, go ahead.
Of her reality, so to speak, is she reaches into his future to materialize a piece of his future for him. And the piece of the future of Captain Talbot that we bring forward is a young boy, about 4 or 5, 8, named Richmond, who is supposedly the product of the two of them. In other words, he's their son, Lee Ray and Captain Talbot, who to this point in the movie, an hour and some into the film, have had no romantic entanglement whatsoever.
I enjoy that he named him son. He named the son after himself.
Yes.
His name was Richmond.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's still creepy.
Yes.
It was kind of weird.
Yep.
It was kind of weird. I was trying to figure out if the kid was some actor that we knew, but I can't figure out who he was in the movie. Like, he's not listed in the credits on IMDb, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. But, yeah, that was disturbing. But it is what convinces him to then run away with her and spend the next 15 minutes running around the city of San Francisco, kissing her and just making goo-goo eyes at her and becoming and falling in love with her. So, Mr. Time Traveler.
Yes.
By bringing an element of the future back in time, did she not change the past?
Well, unless it's a closed causal loop, and then it's not a problem.
Okay. Which is possible.
Indeed. As possible as paradox.
True enough. I feel like we're getting into some Doctor Who territory here, but that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, he and I are having tea tomorrow. We'll figure it
out. Okay. Yeah, if you could just submit a paper or something on that, that would be great.
Awesome.
But yeah, so they run around San Francisco while McCluskey sets up a command center in the hotel to try and track them down. And General Vandeman, unaware that his astronaut has been lost, gets in a jet and flies to San Francisco after previously saying that he was not able to fly because he was too old.
Well, Rich calls him and says, to tell him about the stuff with Lyra, but... he's already left, and she goes, oh, great, well, we have tons of time to kill then. And I'm just like, no, just get to the point.
There's a whole lot of nothing going on in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Except that we learned that the species, I guess I'll use the word, kisses by nibbling on ears.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
very
that's,
strange.
That's what they do in France. No, it's
and
not.
we also learned how much the filmmakers hated beatniks.
Yes, because what's happened here is that they're trying – so when they finally do catch up with Captain Talbot, he is separated from Lee Ray, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because what happens is – he calls in and demands the proton ray shielding, and they manage to track the phone. They trace the phone, and they have a car phone. At the same, it's a whole complicated thing where McCluskey picks him up. Lee Ray runs for safety, but he gets picked up and she was like trying to nibble his ear and, you know, kiss him and do all sorts of things with him while he's on the phone, which seems rather counterproductive to what she's trying to get him to do.
She was getting a little fascinated with him at that point.
She was a little too much, really. And then, like Rachel said, we spend 5 minutes in the police station where they're trying to identify the quote-unquote spy with the general and Captain Richmond, and they're just parading beatniks into the room, which are not actually beatniks. They're just crazy people.
And we have some good ties in here. Todd, do you want to do our ties here?
Yeah, absolutely. So everyone caught that in the first group, the girl in the big sweater reciting poetry is Sally Field.
No way.
Yes, this is her very first movie role.
Oh my gosh.
So.
Okay, I was not going to go back and rewatch this, but I'm going to have to at least go to that scene because, wow.
And then I think either in the same group or the next group on the left-hand side is a woman with big eyes that you might recognize. That Joanne Worley.
Ah, yes.
Okay, this is her first movie role, but she had already been on Dobie Gillis at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just those are the two that I saw.
And goes on to fame in Laugh-In and other things.
Yes, well, both of them go on to decent fame. Well, one really great fame and one,
yes.
I would say, decent fame.
There you go. That's a good way to qualify it.
And Match Game, right?
And Match Game, absolutely Match Game.
Sesame Street is a big name.
Oh, Sesame Street, you're right. There is Sesame Street.
Well, Sally Field, she is an Oscar, though, so...
Yeah, no, I'm not... I'm not saying Joanne Worley is the decent, you know.
Yeah.
The lesser of two.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, she's probably less known by people. Like, maybe, like, half our listeners above a certain age are understanding who she is. Sally Field, even younger people may actually know who she is today because she's been in recent stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But so finally that doesn't work, which makes me question what the point of that scene was, right? They don't find Lee Ray. She's not there. They convince McCluskey to let him go, and he ends up going up in the rocket. Like, there was no point to the whole police lineup beatnik thing.
None.
No. And they kind of, McCluskey's gone. This is like the brush off to McCluskey because they point out the stuff about the pills. Like, not only did they analyze the pills, but they analyzed the bottle and the cap and all that stuff. And he said none of it was from this planet. And he's like, and of course, he still can't figure out what's going on.
Which is not that hard.
No, and they leave him completely hanging on it, so.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that, okay, I don't understand why they think that she's a beatnik. She doesn't look like a beatnik.
Not at all.
Not at all. Like, even in the beginning, like in the scene on the plane, the stewardess calls her a beatnik, like says she's one of those beatnik types, and I'm like, no, she's not.
She's just wearing a sweater dress. And now I know sweaters back then were very associative of beatniks, like the you know, the big turtleneck sweater, but she's just wearing a sweater dress. She's not like wearing like anything out of the ordinary.
Yeah, it was just 60s like va-va-voom.
Yes.
Pretty much, yeah. And yes, she ends up in the rocket, which is kind of strange. Yes, they fly the rocket. He's up there, and we go through the same crazy, you know, multiple control rooms that we went through in the beginning. And what we end up with is Lee Ray shows up in the rocket and convinces him to fly to Beta Lee Ray instead of going back to Earth. And she's nibbling on his ear, and they're hearing all of this back in the control room and very concerned that Captain Richmond is going to abandon ship, so to speak, and go to other places, which is exactly what he ends up doing, and sings a very horrible Sherman Brothers song about the moons of Beta Lee Ray as we go to the credits.
Yes, actually titled The Seven Moons of Beta Lyrae.
I didn't think the song was so horrible.
It's a little sugary.
I agree it's no Parent Trap, but it's better than Summer Magic.
I have a theory about this last scene. I think that after the credits started rolling, he started doing a little more looking in the spaceship and found her copy of To Serve Man. Yeah, she's taken him back for some nibbling. So.
And she taught him how to say Klaatu Varata Dikto?
We don't know. It could be.
Could be.
Yeah, I mean, and we've poked a lot of fun at this, but I mean, I think the main problem with the movie is that it just drags out something that could have been like an hour long TV show. Like, if you don't realize that Lee Ray is an alien from minute one, like, I don't think you've seen movies before, right? So it's not something that's like a big reveal or any of that kind of stuff. It just, the movie just drags out stuff that doesn't need to be that long. Like, if this was an episode of the Disneyland TV show, I think it would be really cute and really great in like 45 minutes.
I said to Cheryl at one point, I said, I don't think we're ever going to the moon.
No, I put the time on there. It was an hour and 31 minutes into the movie until the rocket launch happens. And I didn't watch the trailer or anything for this movie. I just saw the poster, and I thought this was a space adventure. So if I'd known from minute one that this was not a space adventure, I would have had completely different expectations for this movie.
I also thought not only was this a space adventure, I thought there'd be a whole lot more monkey.
Yes.
Well, I'm grateful there was not. I'm just saying, based on our other experiences with monkey films.
But by the way, at that time that you just measured there, Rachel, my notes actually go, OMG, he's actually in the rocket with a whole lot of exclamation points.
It's very true, very true. Well, I mean, to be fair, the movie is titled Moon Pilot, which we do spend most of the movie with the moon pilot. It's just he's not actually going to the moon.
No, because, right, the only thing that actually went to the moon was the monkey.
Correct.
We don't even know if he went to
but
the
if
moon.
They had titled it... Yeah, it's true. If they titled it Beta Libre Pilot, that would have given away the whole movie.
I was going to say, I don't think he didn't go to the moon. He went around the moon, yeah, and back to Earth.
That's semantics.
So nobody in this movie actually goes to the moon.
Yeah. This is a good point.
Well, it's interesting to note, right, at this point in time, I mean, we hadn't even actually entered orbit, let alone go to the moon, right? We had just done it just before this movie was released, right?
Depending on what you mean. I have to put the vegan Emily
Right. Because
depending
the moon might
on what
landing
you believe,
might not actually be
when
real.
You, what timeline yes. you believe.
Well, I mean, even so, at this point, Yuri Gagarin, right, had only gone into space and not actually manned a capsule, and it wasn't until later in the same year that the U.S. sent up a manned capsule that was controlled by the man. So, the moon was far off at this point still, six years. Right? 6-7 years, something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
There you go. Yeah, so, I mean, we have spent a lot of time bagging on it, but, I mean, for me, it held my interest. And, again, this may have more to do with the fact that, you know, I previously mentioned I was on a plane. I had to sit in the airport for 3.5 hours before I could actually get on the plane and watch the movie. So it was a welcome relief, but it held my interest for the whole time. It's just that, like, each individual scene, at a certain point in the scene, I'm like, okay, let's move on.
I thought overall it was more interesting than to compare it to something that it's very similar to, That Darn Cat.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it's in that vein, right.
I mean, realistically, they're almost the exact same story in a lot of ways, right? There's very similar things going on. Characters and roles are shuffled around, but the basic, you know, stuff goes on in the beginning, and then a long, drawn-on thing in the middle, and then stuff clears up the stuff in the beginning at the end.
Yeah. And there's spies.
And there's spies in both.
Yes.
And in the Shaggy Dog. I guess what we're hearing is that Walt likes spy dramas.
Or he thought they were everywhere. One of the two.
That may be two.
Yeah.
See, so why didn't he and J. Edgar get along?
Maybe they did, and it was all a red herring.
Ah, ba-dum-bum. End of clue.
Yep. All right, so are there any other connections or interesting facts that we need to relate about Moon Pilot before we move on to the ranking.
It does have a Dell comic book that came out about the movie, which was very common for Disney films in that era. It's issue number 1313, published in 1962.
All right, so we will move on to ranking this. All right, so on a scale of 1 to 5, Cheryl, what would you provide for Moon Pilot?
1.5. And I think I'm being generous. I think I might have liked it better. It should be a witch instead of a spy. I mean, like, from outer space. I think I may have been handled that concept a little bit better because of Bewitched and stuff. I really thought the concept of her, you know, first of all, him taking the pill was silly. And then after that, him dealing with this whole thing and reporting it was doubly silly. And then him, and then her infiltration into the room was triply silly. But so overall, it's a silly movie, I thought. But it's a vintage Disney era, that type of, that's what they were making those days. And we know that from other movies we've reviewed. So.
Yeah, it's true. All right, Rachel?
I'm going to also give this 1.5 stars. And half the star is actually just for the general, because he was probably the most enjoyable part of the movie for me, between his mustache and munching on his cigars and just having two levels of volume, either kind of loud or really, really loud. He kind of reminded me of a 1960s J.K. Simmons. So ooh, yeah. I enjoyed him. I didn't really like much of the else of the movie. My note on the movie that I put partway into it was, I said, movies and books are supposed to be life with the boring bits cut out, but this movie is almost entirely the boring bits.
Nice.
Yep.
So yeah, that's my feelings on it.
That's a pretty good summary of it. Todd?
I'm going to say 2, and I'll tell you why. I actually enjoyed Tom Tyron. Is that how you pronounce his name?
I think so.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, because another actor that is a Disney actor that I really like is Fred McMurray. And I felt that the nature that he portrays in this was definitely reminiscent of how McMurray just generally plays roles. That uptight, very stiffness that's comical with a serious bent. I really enjoy the kitschy nature of that, so I got giggles out of it.
I'm going to agree with you. I would give it a 2 as well. It is, I thought for all the dragging on that it does, it's still kind of a fun movie. It definitely doesn't take itself seriously. There's some good jokes, good one-liners here and there. I'm with you, Rachel. I liked Brian Keith as the general. I thought he was pretty funny. And Tom Tyron as the moon pilot or Captain Richmond was good. I might have given it a 3 if they could have made it a little more fast-paced, or, you know, like the beatnik scene at the end. Like, that part, it was so close to the end and so pointless that I kind of just – I didn't know what to make of it. So I will also give it a 2. So we're all in the same range, I think. But pretty much if you're going to watch a Disney movie from this period in the, you know, early 60s, late 50s era, you're going to get something along these lines. Some of them work better than others, but you're not going to get high art from live-action Disney films in this era. So you know what you're getting when you get into something like Moon Pilot. All right, so that is going to do it for this week's show. We hope you have enjoyed our look at Moon Pilot. If you choose to watch this, and hey, why not, right? It's out on Amazon. You can go to and rent it from Amazon Instant Video. I'm sure you can probably find it other places as well. So make sure you go and check it out if you want to keep along with us. Until next week, you can keep in touch with us. Let us know what you think of the review at DisneyFilmProject.com in the show notes. You can leave a comment there. You can also go on Facebook and find us. We're at Disney Film Project, and of course on Twitter at Diz Film Project. So until next week, email. Folks. Yes, email, you're correct, DisneyFilmProject@gmail.com.
Because a lot of people leave us notes, and sometimes we read them, but if you really want like to volunteer for a show or something, email is best, people, so that way I have a record of it.
Very good. All right, so until next week, for Cheryl and Todd and Rachel, we will see you soon.
We're entrusted with the entire security of the United States, and they don't tell me a thing!
Haven't you read our booklet, Simple Science for Senators?
I know, mothers. I had one.
If it ever got out that we shot this fine American boy around the moon without him saying goodbye to his mom...